You're listening to season two of What Do I Know with me, Joanne Pei. And if you've been following me for a while, you know that I'm committed to find out more about things that I don't know about. Why do I do that? Because, you know, when you don't know something, you tend not to care so much about it, even though you really should. Like TikTok, for example. I do have a TikTok account. It's at Joanne Pei. But my following is nowhere near my guest today. He's got 22.4 million followers and counting. And by the time you're listening to this, it's probably grown. And even his dad, who makes a regular appearance on his shows, has got 8.6 million followers. Wow, maybe I should audition to be on his TikTok. Know who I'm talking about yet? Yes? He's at Ming Wei Rocks. Hi, Ming Wei.
Hello. Hi.
Okay, so a lot of us know you as a TikTok content creator, but not many of us know that you're actually a national Taekwondo athlete and martial artist. I know there's a side of this story that you don't share much, right? But we're here today to find out more, okay? Did you give up being a national athlete, or, you know, why did you choose to do this now and not what you used to do before? Take us back all the way back to when you were a national athlete. Yeah. Like, how did it all begin? Like, what made you decide that you want to be a Taekwondo professional?
So I guess I only started Taekwondo because I failed to get into archery last time in secondary school. So we needed to choose a
CCA. You wanted archery?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Interesting.
It was cool. Like at a point of time, Korean dramas, they were shooting arrows and stuff. So we thought it was quite cool to shoot arrows.
Okay. The only person who shoots arrows, I think, is Cupid. Like, that's my generation probably. Like, you know, Cupid arrow. Yeah. Okay. So you got into Taekwondo in school.
Yes, correct. So I think for me, is once I start doing something, I will just go all the way. Like,
I mean, I was in volleyball in school, but that didn't make me want to be like in the national team or something, or go to the Olympics for that matter. So what was it for you?
So I guess when I joined around 2007, I think 2008 was the Beijing Olympics.
Right.
So being in Taekwondo, of course, you want to look at Taekwondo when it comes to Olympics. So at the point of time when I first looked at them compete, I thought it was like, actually, whatever they do is actually quite simple. It's something like we do in training and stuff.
Wow.
So it's quite easy to be
confident.
Yeah, but of course, that's not the reality. Like when you start to go into the game, you realize how far you are from the rest, and like to be able to execute such a simple move at such a high level thing, it takes many years. So I guess like you tell yourself you're almost there, and that almost there just slowly became like 10 years.
Okay, what do we not know about training for the Olympics?
So I guess when it comes to training at the highest level, a lot of people train full time, and I think this is something I didn't really know until my final stages of the sports too, where I thought that most of the full-time athlete maybe train like 4 to 6 hours a day. And because one day we have 24 hours minus 8 hours of sleep, you have 16 hours. So minus away 4 hours of training, you still got like 12 hours, 13 hours to do what you want. So you can actually study, you can actually work, or you can do any other things. But what I really realized is after you really commit yourself to training and you don't work, you don't study, you really use the rest of the time to rest, you see a huge improvement in whatever you do. And that was when I realized that full-time training means that you got more time to rest. Yeah.
What does that mean? You mean like, when you mean more time to rest, do you mean you just sleep it off? Or like, what do you do during your so-called rest time?
So during those rest times, you don't really have to work or think about other things because it still drains you mentally. Like, you still got homework, you still got exams, you still got other commitments. It really drains you out from recovering. Whereas when you are a full-time athlete, you can really focus on recovery. So maybe doing more stretches in between, maybe sleeping more to recover, maybe eating more healthily and resting more, and make sure you can recover well for the next day's training, or even reviewing your training to make sure tomorrow you can improve on yourself. Yeah.
Can I be honest with you?
Yeah.
That sounds very boring to me.
Yes, it is actually more like a routine. So I remember when I was training full-time, I really dreaded it at a point of time because I wake up at, I tell you, the day-to-day routine, I wake up at 5 a.m. because I need to walk 1 hour to the train station to go to the train.
What do you mean walk 1 hour? You choose to walk 1 hour, or
yeah,
there's no bus yet?
I was in Europe. I was in Norway. So I stayed up the hill. So we got to, because I stayed with the coach, he offered me to stay there.
Oh, so you were training overseas?
Yes, I was training full-time overseas.
Oh, yeah. And who pays for it?
At the point of time, my parents were funding it. So I, of course, I tried to cut costs, and the coach was nice. He offered me to stay at his place.
Right.
Yeah.
Your journey to wanting to be like a professional athlete, to want to take part in the Olympics, it involves sort of your parents paying out of their pocket to support all your training?
Yes, of course. I think in terms of like in Singapore, they do pay for some competitions to go, but I really do want to improve. So in order to do so, sometimes you got to go overseas for training, and there might not be extra budget from that. So if I really do want to excel in it, and my parents really supported it, because it's like once in a lifetime, I can't go back to the age anymore. So of course, then I went for it.
So take me back to Norway and that 1 hour walk to the train station.
It's not really full 1 hour, but I took 30 minutes walk down to the train station. So after you take the train, which involved another 30 minutes, walk another 10-20 minutes to there. So I remember it was very cold because it's Norway and it was very snowy. So in the morning, you would slip and fall in those like heels down. Oh. So after that, it was so cold. You reach the training place at around 7 o'clock and then you start training the first session until, I think the first session start around 8. So you reach there earlier to prepare. It was very cold, so you need longer time to warm out. So the first training session would last around 1.5 to 2 hours to maybe 10 or 11. Then after that, you go for your lunch, you rest for 30 minutes, 1 hour, you start your second training session. And then by the time it's around 4 p.m., 5 p.m. So sometimes option one is you go back and rest and prepare for the next day. And which is once you go back and once you reach back, it's already around 6 p.m., 7 p.m. By the time you eat dinner, it's already 9 p.m. You got to wake up again for the next day, 5 a.m. training.
Yeah.
And on some days, you go for another training, which is at night, 7:30 to 9:30. And then you come back again, it's 10, 11. And then you sleep, wake up, the whole process repeats again. It's very boring.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. And then what kept you going?
I guess at the final point of time, it was really trying to qualify for the Olympics, because no Singaporean has ever went to the Olympics before. So for Taekwondo. So of course, that was my main motivation that really kept me going. It's like, or in one last time and then you can like stop after.
Yeah. I mean, how many years was this we're talking about?
I think I did this for 2 to 3 years. So at the start, it was a mixture of like trying to finish school and trying to train at the same time. So when I was in school, what happens is during holidays, I would do this because in university, you got long holidays. So I would always fly overseas. But from a week to week when in school, usually is around 10 weeks or 12 weeks. So in between those timings, like Saturday, Sunday, sometimes I'll fly to normal like Southeast Asia countries to train.
Just over the weekend and then come back again?
Yeah, because sometimes, I mean, for us, we are contact sports. So interaction really plays a part. So by going to nearby countries, you can still maintain a certain level so that during the holidays, when you go overseas for a full training, you can be more prepared. Yeah,
you're training for Olympics, which is once in like every 4 years.
Yep.
So during those like off peak, I guess, you know, before you actually get to go and do all the qualifying and all that, how do you sort of put to practice what you've trained?
So actually during off peak is where people train the most, because off peak is where people really catch up on where you are lacking. Because during the season itself, it's a lot of competition. So there's not enough time for you to improve on what you want to work on. So for example, if the competition is back to back from week to week, I remember that I took 36 flights in 1 year just to compete in different countries. Yeah, that was...
I mean, that also would sort of have a physical toll on your body and your performance, isn't it?
Yes, correct. So like things like airplane, we make sure to wear compression socks so your leg doesn't swell, so you can really compete. There's a lot of like... other things that
what else I mean, what else do you think could be applicable for like the normal person, like, you know, sometimes we travel, so we feel tired. Yes, or we feel jet lag, and then you know how athletes sometimes have certain tips or, you know, to keep themselves in good condition, like anything that, you know, you can share that you feel like even if you're not an athlete, yeah, you know, you could also take a tip or two from there.
Vitamin B tablets. So vitamin B tablets actually helps you to improve concentration. Not sure whether it's a placebo effect, but I usually take it before every competition or exams. I think not many people not know. And then suddenly I can feel that I got a tunnel vision of whatever I need to focus on. Yeah.
You know, one of the things that I've heard some motivational speakers share is that athletes do a lot of, what do you call, visualization, right?
Mm.
Like you visualize, I guess, winning or something like that.
I would say that not really visual. I mean, you start to visualize, but what I do more is before every competition, I'll be very scared. Like, I would just think that I'm not good enough. So what I would do is, one way that I learned from the coach is I start to cut out clips that has worked for me before. Like maybe this interaction, I scored a point, and then I compile into a whole library. So before the fight, I would just, before my competition, I will actually watch all of them.
Your own.
Yes, correct. Clips. So to show myself, I've done it before, I can do it again, because I can tell that in the morning of every competition, I'm very scared. Like, in fact, I don't dare to go and fight. I'm scared I get knocked out every time. Yeah.
And has that worked for you? That the compilation of your moves and watching it before every fight?
I think it helps a bit, but ultimately you still feel, I mean, same as like going to exams and stuff, you feel so nervous, you're not sure, but every time after the exam or after a very big event, you feel that actually it's not that bad. Why am I so scared before? It's exactly the same feeling where before the competition. And then because of it, you tell, I could have done a bit better and things like that. Then all the regrets start to come. Yeah.
I mean, because taekwondo is a solo sport.
Yes, correct.
Right? Yeah. Have you ever done like a group kind of sport before?
Actually, I'm very bad at those. That's why I choose to a sport that is more individual, so I don't drag people down.
I always imagine, yeah, right? Because I play volleyball, not at a national level, but you know, when you have a team, it's less stressful in that sense, because it's sort of everyone sort of shares the load. But when you're yourself and you're by yourself, it's like win or lose, and you know, do or die is like you yourself, right? So it can be very, I feel it can be very crippling. The fear can be so crippling.
Yes, I think, but on my end, I feel that maybe it's how I see it is I'm not dragging people down, because I'm a person that I scared because of me, I drag people down, I feel bad. So if I lose, it's on me. I don't drag anyone down, like kind of thing. So that's why I prefer to do like a solo sport more than a team sport. Because I get stressed when let's say if it's a team and the ball passed to me, what if I cannot successfully like serve it or like hit it, and then it's on me kind of thing. Yeah.
So have you ever like froze on the spot or anything like that? Like it's so, like the fear is so big and so overwhelming that you just blank out or you just don't know what to do with it?
There is, I think, of course, when I was competing, right?
Yeah.
So I remember I was training alone in Iran for 41 days. I think that was one of the most scary memory I ever had, because I was there alone and there was I had no training partner there, so I was there alone, and Iranians, they are very strong and they hit very hard. So at a point of time, I had no one to guide me there. I was just there alone, and of course the coaches there, they will focus on their players. Why would they want to focus on another country's like player, right? But I'm still lucky enough to be able to train there. But I was just scared every time, because they need to show that they are better. So when they hit really like hard, until that I dreaded training every day there.
I mean, why did you go there? I mean, knowing that you had no one, and like, what? I mean, how did you summon the whole courage and and even to persist and staying on, right? How?
I guess it's because when you're in Singapore, you reach your, I mean, I want to go out of my comfort zone. I think I was, at a point of time, I was really winning like consecutive national medals, but I still couldn't win much at international competitions. So in order for me to, I told myself that if I want to win at international competitions, I got to really train with the best. And of course, they were one of the best. So I was lucky that I could even enter to train with them. But of course, one thing that I needed to overcome is that they are quite scary. Yeah.
So how did you sort of, I mean, did you knock on their door? Like you Googled them and then you just sign up on your own? And how does it?
The federation has good connections there at the point of time. Okay. So I was quite thankful that at least I could enter, like even though it was scary, even though I knew that there wouldn't be much guidance, but sometimes interaction is the best form of like guidance. Just that you got to do a lot of figuring out yourself. Yeah.
So what was the lesson that you took away from that experience?
Actually, it's not really from the training there, but it was there that I met the Norwegian national team, which kindly asked me, because they saw, oh my god, I was there training alone. So they asked me to go and train with them. That was when, after I went to train with them, I got really proper guidance. And I would say my time there, in 1 year, I improved more than like what I did in 10 years. Yeah.
So you mean the Norwegians invited you to train with them, and then that's why you were in Norway and that?
Yes, correct. Yeah. So it was a UK coach. So he was a Norway national team coach at the point of time. So he saw that I was really trying to push to qualify for the Olympics, and Singapore being a very small country, is similar in Norway. Norway also doesn't have much population. They also have a small team.
Mm.
And they were also trying to qualify someone to the Olympics. So it's more like, I think there's also difference in the training style, because in most of the Asian country, they got many people, so they can do like the survival of the fittest. Many people just do like very intensive training, and the last one standing represents the country because that they are the strongest. But in the smaller countries, the training style needs to be a bit different because your population is a bit lesser. So therefore the training style needs to be a bit different, and that's why I feel that I could really improve a lot by training with them. Mm. By using a lot of sports science and things like that. And I really went, I immediately I came back to Singapore, I just told my school I want to go over to Norway. Yeah.
And so you decided to stop school?
I took a gap.
You took a gap year. Okay. And then after that, COVID hit.
After training there, I achieved results instantly. After I came back,
By results, you mean you mean like you took part in a competition and you you won, and or what how do you see that, measure that results?
Yeah, so before going there, the only time I won a world ranking event medal was in SEA Games in Singapore. So I got a bronze medal there. So that was the only time I won, which is the best medal was a bronze medal in a world ranking competition. So after I went to train there, I won a first like world ranking gold medal in the Commonwealth Taekwondo Championship.
Mm.
So Taekwondo is not in the Commonwealth Games. So they host their own edition of Commonwealth Taekwondo Championship, hoping to get into the Commonwealth Games.
Mm.
So I won gold in that. And that was like the first time I won a gold in a world ranking event. Yeah.
And you were competing with how many people?
I think I won a total of 3 fights in a row. So I remember 3 days later, I took part in another competition, Canada Open, because it's at the same area. So I won silver. Because I fought 7 fights in 3 days at a point of time. And during the finals, my body couldn't take it. Because like on day to day, because I didn't really win much before, like in overseas competition. So maximum, you will win like 1-2 fights in every few days. 2 fights or 3 fights. But now I'm doing 7 fights in 3 days. So my body couldn't take it. And I fractured my leg in the finals. Like really a bad fracture, 3 months out. But it was then I told myself that, I could actually win a medal in the world ranking competition. If not, I would have stopped already. Because one thing people don't know that if I didn't win that competition, I wouldn't be able to go for another overseas competition. Because I wasn't selected for that. And I was only being told 1 week before the competition that I could go. And if I couldn't win a medal, then they wouldn't support me anymore because I haven't been winning medal.
Support you in what sense?
Like sending me overseas for competition anymore. That would mean like it's the end of my career. So at the point of time, I just told myself, no harm going. Like I didn't go Canada before also. So myself go there and see and like give myself my best. And if not, at least I tried my best. So yeah.
But you broke your leg.
And then I won a gold and then I won a silver, but I broke my leg. But it proved that
you could win.
Yeah, you could win a goal. Like, but that is after like almost 10 years of training every day.
Well, this is the story that we don't know, right? We see that glorious side and then we are like, oh, you know, great. But we don't know the struggles that you had to go through.
Yep.
Any other sort of more memorable training struggles that you had throughout these 10 years that of your sporting career?
So yeah, after that, of course, I told myself, okay, most of the Olympians win before a gold medal in a world ranking event. So I'm almost there. So I pushed myself a bit more. And thankfully, my parents were very open to it because they really supported me since young. So I pushed myself for the next competition, which is quite close. By the time it was 2017, it was close to the Tokyo Olympics. So my goal was to go to the Tokyo Olympics. I start to take gap years. And then before Tokyo Olympics, there was the 2019 SEA Games, which is in Philippines.
Mm.
So again, I was told if I don't go to the finals, they won't support me for the Olympics. And to get to the final is very hard because I would say since Taekwondo became an Olympic sport, no one went to the finals of a SEA Games before.
Why is that?
Because it's very competitive. Like Thailand, Philippines, Vietnam, they all train full time. It's like they are really good. And especially in Thailand, they have Olympic gold medalists from Thailand. So they are really, really like very good.
Mm.
So I went to 2019 SEA Games, you know, same last competition. What's the worst that can happen? And at the point of time, I was already making some content, I would say. So I was just thinking, okay, if I don't win, at least I tried my best. I already got before a Commonwealth like gold, and I mean, that's really an achievement. So I'm more than happy to just continue with school. What's the worst that can happen? So I remember I went Norway to train. And then when I came back, the time I paid for someone from Taiwan to fly over to continue to keep the quality for the last 1 week before the SEA Games. Because Norway is very cold, we needed to come back earlier to get used to the weather. And true enough, after one training session with the guy, I felt really ready for the SEA Games. I had heat rashes. So I couldn't, like, it was very bad. So I couldn't, it's like every time you sweat, it's painful. It's like stinging pain when you sweat. So I couldn't even sweat at all. So I couldn't take medicine too because it was under anti-doping. So leading up to the competition, I couldn't train at all. And then I still... Yeah, so when I weigh in, because one more thing that we always do is we have to weigh in before every competition.
Weigh in means like physically take your weight, right?
So every competition, I have to drop like 4 kilos and things like that. And we really like practice until... We weigh, okay, so I fight under 58 kilograms. So I always weigh at 57.99 or something.
Mm.
And then after that, we will gain to 62 kg the next day. We have a strategy to do it, to try to be at the top of your weight class. But for these SEA Games, I remember I couldn't gain back any weight because I was like, I wasn't feeling so great. So I remember I went to the SEA Games after I weighed in. I was very light, but I didn't really care so much. I was just like continue. I just went ahead. So I won the first fight and I went to the semi-final. So okay, so to go to the finals, you need to win 2 fights. So I won the first fight, and the second fight was quite tough and I was losing 3-0. So I was already prepared to give up. Like, okay, I already got a bronze medal after I win 1 fight. So okay, I got a bronze medal. I was thinking, you know, can you imagine? I was like bouncing inside. And then I was thinking, okay, I'm happy with a bronze medal. I can now continue back in school and things like that. Then suddenly, you know, during exchange, you don't know what happens. And then I was leading 7-3. And then I was still fighting. So I was thinking now, okay, now I want to get the best medal in Singapore. The brain just switched so suddenly like that. And
all this while you were fighting?
Yeah, I was thinking, can you imagine? I was thinking this in the ring while I was fighting.
Wow, and you can remember that you're thinking this while you're in the ring. This is amazing. Okay.
Yeah, correct. So after that, I pushed it through and I won the fight. And that was I went to the final, so I hit the goal. And before the finals, I was very tired. My whole body was cramping because I lost too much weight. Philippines is really hot and I lost a lot of weight. I remember I lost 3-4 kgs in 1 day, and then I couldn't hydrate back in time. I was cramping in the finals, and I didn't win the finals, of course, because I lost to a better player, which was in the Olympics, and I broke my hand in the last fight.
Mm.
Yeah, but to me, the goal was hit, so go back to training again to try to qualify for the Olympics, because I now have a bit of support all the way to the Olympics. So after that, I went back again straight away. Once my hand recovered, I went back to Norway to prepare for the Olympic qualifiers. It was all good and COVID hit. So at the point of time, I was traveling around Europe to sort of escape COVID. So when this country has COVID, I'll move on to the next country, and to it spreads there, I just keep jumping around.
Trying to run away from COVID.
Yes, correct. So competitions get cancelled there, but I expected like the Asian Olympic qualifiers to still continue. So even like up to the competition itself, the qualifications, we were still training. We don't know whether it was going to get cancelled or not. So trainings were all cancelled in Norway. So because I stay with the Norway coach, so he will bring me to the woods to train. Like, we'll just run behind to the woods behind. Then we can still continue training there to prepare for the Olympic qualifiers. Until just 1 week before the competition, it got cut off. And then instead of flying to there, we had to fly back home. I fly back to Singapore. So at a point of time, I was like really lost. I don't know what to do. Yeah, because that was something that I took gap year. I really wanted to go for like many years, and no one knows what is going to happen. And my friends all graduated except me.
Oh, that must have sucked. Oh my goodness. Like all of a sudden, like you've been like, there's this goal, end goal that you see, and then all of a sudden it's just not there anymore.
Yeah, and then because I was in my final year, like final semester, so I did my final year project halfway. Mm-hmm. So when I went back to school, the professor wasn't there anymore. So I needed to restart the whole thing. So wow. I was a bit lost. Like, should I continue back in school, or should I still push for this Olympics?
Which you don't know whether it's going to happen.
Yeah, I'm not sure what's going to happen. And not knowing whether it's happened is one thing, but I was also trying to keep to the standard I was at, because I was interacting with people every day. I was really training, but then it resumed to just being at home in front of a computer trying to train. And then when I look at the nearby Asian countries, they got no such rules where they need to stay at home. They will still like continue training and things like that. So you start to have a lot of doubts, like, is the Olympics going to happen? Is it like worth still training when you know you can't be at the top of what you could have been? Yeah. During the COVID time, I was faced with two choices, either to continue training for Olympics without knowing whether it will happen, or to pursue a career, like possibly a full-time career. Yeah. At a point of time, I didn't really want to let like my fate be controlled by, let my life be controlled by fate. So I chose the career part. Yeah.
I mean, when you were pursuing your career as a professional athlete, I mean, you said your parents were very supportive.
Yes.
But what about like school, for example, or friends?
Yeah.
You know, were they also supportive, or actually it's very tough, you know, one trying to be a professional athlete here in Singapore?
I would say that I was in poly, so it was really hard to make friends, because every time they need to go out, you can't be there. Like, you got to say you go for training. But I'm quite thankful I still have quite a close group of friends that we still stay to today. So it comes to, it's really the quality, not the quantity of friends, and friends who really understand that, who understands you. Yeah. So, but I would say that making friends is a bit hard, because when they have activities, you couldn't be there, and sooner or later you'll just drift apart. Yeah.
And school, I mean, was school supportive? Because you would probably have to take time off and, you know, and miss classes and all that in order to train.
Yeah, schools are generally quite supportive, I would say. And just that you really have to take the extra effort to
catch up. And
yeah.
Okay, so you chose the career part, and then that started your whole TikTok journey.
Yes, yeah.
Okay.
So not just TikTok journey, it's more like I saw a potential of like, helping creators and brands to grow on TikTok, and using whatever skills I have to help more people.
Yeah. But at that point in time, you were already a successful TikTok content creator.
I would say at the point of time, I had around 5-6 million followers, I think. But at the point of time, it's just really making content. TikTok was new. There was not much monetization available. So it was really just going all in. Because like I say, when I do something, I really go like all in. So I don't expect to see the results immediately. Yeah.
Did you know what sort of results you might be getting with TikTok? Since you said it, you know, it's very new. Nobody really knows what it is and where it's going to be.
Actually, I didn't know. I just went all in. So what I did was immediately, I just hired one person to come and help me, because I realized that I couldn't be filming and editing at the rate that I was doing. Like, I couldn't like just set a tripod and then run in front to film. It takes too much time. So I just took a chance, just hire someone and really create content nonstop. I remember I was creating content the whole day for like 6 months. Like, my day to day is waking up, film, edit so I can post at night, think of idea, buy the props, prepare for next day, every day for 6 months.
That's the epic way of training too, isn't it? It's kind of a bit like that.
Yeah, correct. So I guess I brought over a bit of what I've been doing in training to content creation. Just that in content creation, at least you can eat. Because when it comes to training last time, when we needed to cut weight, sometimes you cannot eat.
You are a sportsman. I have got my own preconceived notions, right? But I just assume that as a sportsman, you have to eat, but you burn and then you have to eat.
But we still have to watch our weight. We cannot snack as much as we want to. And I think at my earlier stage of losing weight, I really got the wrong mindset of losing weight I agree. It's not like not eating, it's just that I don't eat snacks. Because sometimes when you work, you want to, or when you do something, you want to eat snacks and sugar, which I think you can't be eating that when you are losing weight. But initially, I think this is something that I haven't told many people, that when I first started losing weight last time, I didn't know anything at all. So I just don't eat. And I start to cut water until I urine blood a few times.
Oh dear.
Yeah. Mm. So ever since then, I went to see nutritionists by Sports Singapore. They were very supportive. They guided me how to lose weight, and that didn't happen, thankfully. But initially, that was what I did. I thought that not eating means losing weight, but in fact, it's not. It's more about trying to cut down your calories and not to take so much like sugary things and things like that. So that's what I meant by when I was losing weight, I couldn't eat those sugary and snacky stuff. And suddenly now when I'm doing this, I don't have to care anything. I can just snack as much as I want. I can drink as much bubble tea as I want. And the sugar really keeps you going.
Okay, for the record here, just in case people are listening in halfway and then, you know, they don't really know what we're talking about and what is this losing weight thing.
Yeah.
Perhaps you can give some context to that. Like, why do you need to lose weight?
Okay, so for taekwondo, there is like weight categories. So you have to compete in your weight category you have to hit your weight to compete in your weight category. And of course, you get more points hitting the head than the body, because head has more points than body. And the taller you are, the more advantage you have.
Mm.
So even though I'm competing at 58 kg, there's people like 10 cm taller than me. And that is like the average, I would say. So if you don't like, so I guess you cut weight to have an advantage. Yeah.
So you move a bit faster, is that what it is?
Or you have the height advantage. I've seen people like 58 kg, 193 cm.
That must be very skinny, isn't it?
Yeah. So
because I mean my brother is about 19, about there.
Yeah.
I mean I don't think he's 58.
Yeah. It's really
I think he's skinny already.
Yeah.
Wow.
So if the person is so tall you can't even hit their head and like they touch your head easily, so you really need to have the weight advantage. The height advantage.
So does this the athlete's way of losing weight, is it something that normal people can do, or
I would say not? That is very short term, whatever we do. I don't think it's recommended, because after the weigh-in, boom, you're 4 kg. I've seen people within like 1-2 days after they gain back 8 to 10 kg. It's quite crazy.
But even as a sports person, when you gain weight and lose weight, it's all done in a healthy way, isn't it?
I would say we try to, I think, but there's I would say when you are desperate sometimes it's not really healthy anymore. I would sit in sauna set for like hours to try to lose the weight, and there's a few times I fell asleep inside. Luckily I didn't.
Okay, so now your life, now you know you have your bubble tea. I just saw your recent 2 bubble teas, in fact.
Okay.
With and you get to snack a lot more. Yeah. Does that also mean that you're less like healthy now?
No. I still try to keep healthy because I love to run, so I guess I will still burn off when I will still try to exercise whenever I can, because I always believe that exercising keeps your mind healthy.
Yeah. I think if you're if you do sports at some point and you do so much of it and you have done it professionally, you kind of can't not exercise.
Yeah, I guess.
Right.
I guess just that it feels a bit weird, because I used to be exercising like 6 to 8 hours a day, and now I'm exercising like maybe 2 hours a week.
Oh, yeah. 2 hours a week. Okay.
Yeah, if I'm busy, it's like 2 hours a week, but I still try to squeeze in as much training as I can.
Mm. So we've heard that you sort of incorporate some of that training routine and rigor into your whole content creation as well. So for 6 months, you know, you were doing the same old thing over and over again. I mean, yeah. not the same thing, because obviously your content is different, but that routine, right, yeah. of filming and then eating and then editing and then uploading daily. What sort of results did you see from that?
So at a point of time, I set myself a goal. Like, I wanted to hit like 10 million followers, let's say, because I was rising and I was telling myself to ride on the wave and not be complacent and like, oh, you know, I have enough. And I really just want to see what is my potential. So I really keep pushing until when I hit the 10 million mark. I remember I got very burnt out. So I didn't really...
So 6 months, you got 10 million. 6 months of that you know, content creating every
I think from 4 or 5 to 10 million, I would say.
Okay.
And I mean, I hit the goal, but I got really like burnt out, like to the point where I dreaded to be in front of camera, but I was just doing it because that was what has views.
So by burnout, you mean physically, emotionally, or what? Or like you just ran dry of ideas, or what was it?
I would say like, what is next for me?
What do you think was missing then?
I think initially it was like, what is next? Because I wasn't earning any...
So even at 10 million, you weren't earning anything?
Yeah, I would say I got some branded deals here and there, but it's not as... it was just enough to support my videographer, I would say. So it was like still... What happens to you next month where you have no branded deals, right?
Yes.
So that was at a point of time where short form content was still new and TikTok was new, and not many brands were willing to invest in TikTok at a point.
I mean, even right now, I think there are some people who are still resistant to the idea of TikTok.
I mean, although I see an increase in more, I can still understand why. And I guess it's also like a stability thing, and that's why not many people do content full time, because you can have one branded deal this month. You thought, or you can have two or three, it's good, the money is good, and what happens next month when you get zero? You still got a team to feed.
Yeah. Yes. So how do you overcome that?
So what I did was I started to diversify. I created courses where I help brands and creators to grow. So I managed to coach over 1,000 creators over like 1 year, and a few of them eventually turn to full-time content creators, and those people are not just from Singapore, like more, like it can be all over the world. So that was something that I did to make sure that even though I couldn't really monetize from the content I make, I can teach people the skill for them to monetize in their
way. Feel like I have to sign up for his course. I was just saying, because you know, in fact, when I first got to know about TikTok, it's so alien to me. And I can just only imagine how my parents must have felt with Instagram, you know, back in the day. So, I mean, hearing what you're sharing, I think it's very enterprising of you. But I'm also sure you've got naysayers or people who criticize you for making this leap, right? And this switch. What were some of them?
I guess I think there were some of them who will say that, oh, is it because I couldn't qualify to the Olympics and that's why I didn't continue? I think there's a lot of like those. I mean, true enough, I didn't qualify in the sense, but at least I would tell myself that I have no regrets, because I did whatever I could to sustain as hard as I could and as long as I could. And I mean, I feel that I tried all avenues. Like even during COVID, I really tried to follow those Zoom training for like months, and it was just very tough to continue. And there was just too much uncertainty.
Okay, let's move on to this whole TikTok journey.
Yep.
And then you decided to also diversify so that you could also support yourself.
Yep.
Right? And your team. At that time, you said you had one videographer. Has it grown since?
Oh, yes. Like right now I have more.
Now you have a team of...
Yeah.
When do you decide... At which point do you decide that, okay, I need to hire more people?
When the workload is too much for one person, and in order for them to stay longer, like I don't really want them to get burnout too. So if it's too much for one person, I will start to look for another person. Yeah.
But then because you said you know, you can't just like... Because this month I might be super busy because I got a lot of deals, and then if I hire and then next month I don't have anything, but I still have got to support this group of people. So how how do you know when is the right time to hire and keep the person?
When I post a content, we don't really get monetized. I think like what I do is I compile those videos. I can put onto other platforms that can be monetized. So the money isn't much, but it's enough to support like maybe half a person's salary or like a full.
By that you mean what? Put on other platforms like?
Like I would say like YouTube and things like that. Like, you know, longer form videos, usually they have like those ad revenue and things like that. So it's not much, but at least every small bits count, right? A bit from here, a bit from here. At least you can have it. Yeah.
Okay. So how do you know what sort of content would work?
I tried different type of content, and of course, when one content works, I just make many versions of the same thing. I guess that is how most of the content creator who succeeded, like they do, they are known for that style, so they just do like 1,000 videos of that, 1,000,000 videos of the same thing.
And I know people like get sick of it after a while, or actually no, you notice that they just like the same thing but different versions of it.
Yeah, I'm not sure why, but like I guess people just like the same thing but different versions.
Then how do you reconcile with it? Because like just now you were saying, right, that you got burnt out and then you were just making content because you knew that worked. And then how do you reconcile this feeling of, actually, I don't really want to do this, but I know this kind of video works and I got to like do it. How do you reconcile that?
I guess when you got to start paying people salary, then like, you got to do it. So like even for this year, I would say I didn't really film anything for the first 8-9 months of the year. So in fact, if you look closely at my TikTok account, I do like average of one posting a month. Yeah.
And does that affect your following and your...
It does. I drop a few 100,000 followers.
And how does that make you feel?
Of course, it was a signal and message to tell me that I got to start creating content again. If not,
because you sound like someone, at least from our conversation here, that you're very goal oriented, right? And you're very, you know, you see results. You want to see results, and results motivate you to continue to work hard. And in TikTok, for example, I mean, I guess your results are measured by the number of followers and your likes and all that.
Yeah.
Which is why I would imagine it must be hard for you when you see the numbers drop, or when you see...
I think initially, but after that, I try not to let it affect me so much, because I guess the account did grow to like 22 million plus followers, but it doesn't make sense in the Singapore market because Singapore doesn't have 22 million people. So why will advertisers pay for them to be in this account and things like that? So I can understand why people don't really want their content to be posted here. In the end, I'm just really trying to create more organic content to try to keep the account growing. But I guess for this year, the focus, I shifted a bit. So I moved to helping brands and creators to grow. So I was a bit very busy on helping to settle that.
Which is why you also have less time to create your own content. Correct. And to upload.
Yeah.
Are you saying that the 22 million follower, the 22 million number on your account means nothing?
Of course, it means something. It means that there's people who recognize me for making those content.
Right.
But I was just thinking from an advertiser point of view, like, why would I want to pay someone with 22 million followers where the content doesn't really go to Singapore to promote in Singapore? It doesn't make sense for them.
So where are your followers from?
I would say more than half is from Southeast Asia.
Right.
And I have US also, like US followers. So, but the thing is, it's a bit hard to take on US deals also, because people in US, they have 80%, 90% from US. Where else? Again, like, I'm in Singapore, so not 80%, 90% is also from US. So it's neither here nor there.
Right. Yeah. So then what is the value of being on TikTok then, and building up the TikTok account, for example?
I would say that unless the brand you're working with is more like a global brand. So when it comes to gaming apps, they don't really matter like where your audience are from, as long as they can download the app. So those are the type of clients that I will try to work towards too. And I wouldn't also like go and like try to put out in a way where it's worth it for the clients. I only work with a client if I can really value add to them. Like for example, if I know that you want Singapore flows, I would say like go and consider another person with Singapore followers and things like that, because I would tell them out front that this is the demographics of the followers, and Like, are you okay with it? Like, kind
right,
of thing. Yeah.
Right. So you've become like a consultant.
Yes, correct.
So
yeah.
This is also why you started your own agency.
Yes, correct. So I believe that if I want to work with people, I must be able to value add to them. If not, it will just be a short-term collaboration. Yeah.
I see. Yeah. Okay. We also have to talk a little bit about your dad, right?
Yes,
because
of course, yeah.
He's like one of the biggest star also on your account. And it's a little bit, it came as a little bit of a surprise for me because I would never imagine my dad being on my social media and being so game to do all those funny things with you. Like, I mean, did you have to convince him or how did that thing, that relationship, this on-screen relationship start?
Yeah, so I guess moving back to like during COVID times, it was a bit, I didn't know what to do. I was just very lost. And at a point of time, I had a TikTok account. So I say, why not just make content to forget about everything? So we couldn't go out to film. So who else can I film with? Because I tried all content that I could film myself, but there's a limit. You run out of ideas, everything is gone. And then I tried to ask my mom to appear in the videos, but she was like,
the one.
And then it's like, okay, let's gang together to ask my dad to help me in just one video.
Really? So you ask your mom to like,
oh, it's just like, I asked my mom, she said no, then I asked my dad, then my mom was like, yeah, why not you, you appear? And then that's how I got my dad to appear in just one video. And 2 weeks later, we thought it was still like a one-time thing, and somehow it picked up after 2 weeks. People were sharing it. So I thought the content is quite easy to make. So 2 weeks later, I said, can you just spare 3 minutes to help me? So I set up everything, the tripod, the framing is okay. He helped me in the second video. And then again, 2 weeks later, it started to grow again. And then that was how it started. Then ever since, from the 2 weeks cadency becomes like 1 week, and then like every 2-3 days. And then after that, when COVID resumed, so that wasn't the type of content I really wanted to do on my channel. So I suggested to start an account for him to just have fun. And then, yeah, that was how it started.
So you mean when, you know, you're saying, hey, why don't you appear in his video? Your mom is it? And he just, oh, okay, like that.
I guess it was a bit reluctant. Then I say, yeah, it's just very simple. Just go there and do this action. Everything was set up nicely. He just needed to appear for like less than a minute.
And then on his own account now, he creates his own. He comes up with his own ideas.
Yeah, so actually he uses TikTok more than me.
Right.
Yeah, because I don't scroll as much as him. So after we created content, he was the one that came out ideas to film instead. So we just helped him to execute it.
So now the filming is done by you,
yeah.
But he just sort of comes up with the ideas himself.
Correct. And then we would just discuss to make it a bit better. And I think that really helps in like father and son relationship. Yeah.
I mean, this is something that I also wanted to ask you about because, you know, we always sort of think that social media, we think of the ills, right, media, but we never realize that social media can actually help parent and child bond, as it has for you.
Yeah,
I mean, what was the relationship with your father like prior to this TikTok collaboration?
I guess before that, we were also pretty close. Like all my competitions, actually, I would say 99% of the time, or most of it, I would say, he actually flies down to watch every of my competition. So it was very supportive. And but other than that, I was mostly overseas training. So I was rarely at home. So there wasn't really much interaction or communication. Because of content creation, we started to communicate with each other much, much more. Yeah.
I mean, I'm also thinking like, if social media is one way, like we as parents can start thinking about using it to engage with our children. You know, I always say this, like when our kids are very young, you know, we teach them how to articulate, you know, their emotions so that they are not just, right? We don't know what they want. You just tell us this is anger, you're angry, you're upset, you're cold, whatever. Yeah. We empower them with the language to talk to us. Yeah. But now it feels like our children, like you, for example, would have to empower your parents with the language to communicate with you in this way. Mm. Like how else have you engaged with your father in terms of using like TikTok or social media? Yeah.
I guess it's more than just even filming together. Like even because he uses the app more, he sees something interesting, he will just share it, not just with him, but his friends too. So it's a good way to even for him to bond with his friends and things like that. Yeah. Like, I mean, nowadays in the family chat, people, instead of sending that just those good morning and kind of the thing, people start to send TikTok videos.
Oh, yes. Yeah, oh, like, my goodness. You get that too. I get it from my dad too, you know, like the good morning.
Yeah. So it changes. Like, I think now even for those groups that I start to see, they are sharing like TikTok tips and things like that. It's becoming more like an educational like platform.
Right. I mean, with all this hype about TikTok, it seems like it's possibly a new career, if I might even say it. Do you see longevity in being a TikTok content creator?
I would say yes to a content creator, because a content creator is not just, I would say, TikTok. I would say for the same piece of content you make, it can be put in other platforms. So it's not really limited to like TikTok itself. Yeah. Although TikTok may be the driving force of why you created the content, but you shouldn't be limited to just one platform.
Then how should you think about it? I mean, because if you're creating, I'm assuming when you think about creating TikTok content, it tends to be short form, may not necessarily make sense, or, well, make sense in that traditional way, right? Mm. Then if you're not just thinking about TikTok, then how do you plan your content?
What I'll do is I will actually create, I'll create different versions of the same video actually. For example, I will film a longer version and then I'll cut it up to put on TikTok, and then I'll see the performance, and then based on the performance, maybe it doesn't do as well, I will cut another version to put on other platforms, or I will put a longer version on either of the platforms. So when people go to different platforms, they are actually seeing a new piece of content. That gives people the incentive to follow you on different platforms. If not, I'll just follow you on one platform. Yeah.
Right. And how do you find inspiration for your ideas?
From different ways. I think I try to make things more relatable. So anything that happens, so even though when I walk out and then I see, oh, like anything that happened, can that be made as a content? Or like, I'm a very clumsy person like myself. So like every time something happened to me, it's like, oh, can this be a piece of content I can try to incorporate it into my content?
So it just sounds to me like your brain never stops, like it never takes a break.
Yeah, I would say so. I'm kind of okay with it. Maybe it's because of me as an athlete before. Like, we're always on and things like that. I know some people can find it quite draining, but to me, I feel quite okay, honestly. Yeah.
I mean, with TikTok, I have to say, or maybe it could also be a misconception, right?
Yeah.
That success seems to come a lot easier. Because back in the day, you know, you kind of have to like step by step climb the corporate ladder. But now it almost feels like one video, if it's like they always say the viral video, correct, right? Like one video can just make you famous overnight. Do you think that there is a shortcut to success?
I would say that even though that it looked like the person just have one viral video, but maybe before that the person has also done a lot of hard work before. Like it can't be just because, I mean, it can be, unless the person is like really, really like, I don't, just everything aligned for the person and then it just hit. But like not everyone is like that, and that shouldn't be the formula for someone who wants to be a content creator. If not, what will happen is they'll just create a few content. Oh, it doesn't hit, I'm not cut for it. Like, I think that no matter what you do, it should always be consistent. And if you are really interested to be a content creator, you don't really need to dive into, I need to do it full time. You can even do it as a side thing. So you don't really have to be so stressed or I have to create content every day. Even creating one content a week, like you see, as week by week you will improve on your content, and suddenly you have that one viral video, then you can decide what you want to do after.
I mean, we are all sort of obsessed with numbers these days, right? So hearing what you're saying, like you can just create once a week and all that, but you know, what about the numbers? The numbers don't come in, right?
It drops.
It does drop. So how? Like what advice have you got?
So to me, although numbers are still important, but I don't really put so much emphasis on that as much as before. Last time I used to be quite particular about the numbers.
I'm sure it is because you know, even as an athlete, right? Every point, whatever matters, right? The numbers matter.
So right now what I do is I just post a video and I just don't look at it. Like for a while. So it doesn't get too, I just start to focus on like the next content or the next thing I want to do rather than keep going back to see. And then that really takes out quite a lot of time, especially on different platforms. You got to keep going back and see. And then that will really make you stress out over.
So now you don't sort of, you put a content out there and then you just leave it. You don't sort of go and assess and see whether it does.
I still do assess them, but it's not so much about the numbers anymore. It's more like, how can I make the next content better? Like, I will go and see, oh, where do people usually drop off? Like, what? How much people are spending on this video? Okay, so if people are spending a lot of time on the video, means they want to see more of such content, then I can build it off that. If not, then maybe I can change a new concept or tweak it a bit, yeah.
Okay, I think for aspiring content creators or content creators who, I mean, want to go viral, for example, right? I mean, I'm sure a lot of them want to be able to have the kind of following that you have. Like, what are some tips that you can share?
So for people who want to make a living off like content creator, content creation, I would say don't be too stressed out of like, hey, I got to post every day, I got to do it full time to be successful. You can even just start off as just doing once a week. If you need to be once a month, so be it. And take a break when you need to. Yeah.
You know how every content creator has their own unique style?
Mm-hmm.
Would you say that that is an absolute necessity if you want to be successful in the whole social media space?
I would say, yeah, I mean, really, like, you really need to hook the people's attention at the start, because nowadays it's so easy. You swipe off, but if people swipe and they realize, oh, that's you, like, within that 1-2 seconds, they might stop and look at your content. So I guess that is one of the more important factors, that what you want people to remember you for, and then you build on that, yeah.
And I think that probably might also need some time for yourself to find out.
Correct.
What is it about yourself that people like?
Yeah. Sometimes it can be a simple of like a catchphrase. At the start of the video, you just say, hi guys. And then when people swipe, hi guys, or they know that that's you. Like, it can be as simple as that. Then people know that, oh, you're the person that always start with hi guys. Like,
what is yours? What do you say is yours?
I would think in the past, it was my attire. Because sometimes I film different parts of content different days. So what I do is I just wear the same thing.
Oh.
So that I don't really have to remember.
Conti,
correct. Yeah. So I don't really remember like which scene I filmed. So it's easy for me to mix and match all the videos together. So because of that, I think when people swipe, they can recognize like, hey, that's the same outfit again.
But you keep your same hairstyle too. Like I said, you literally just walked out of your video, I feel. And I mean, your whole personality is pretty much, I guess even though you don't speak a lot in your TikTok videos, that whole vibe that I get of you is quite similar.
Yeah, I guess because when I first make videos, I didn't speak because I didn't dare to speak in front of a camera.
Oh,
yeah.
And I'm sure now it has changed for you.
Yeah, I mean, I went for lessons. I went for many lessons to really try to speak in front of cameras. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. You know, I think we all have something to learn from you, which is this whole idea of training.
Yeah.
It is about training, right? When you're not good at something, you train, you work with the best, you seek out the best, and you continue to sort of put yourself in positions that you're not comfortable in.
Yeah, like step out of your comfort zone once in a while, yeah.
So what's next for you then? Are you going to step out of your comfort zone and do something totally crazy?
Yeah, so I think a lot of people know me for like short form content. So I always wanted to explore longer form content. So I guess there is something I'll be really focusing on. Yeah.
So being a director of like a short film or something?
Oh no, like just posting more long form content. Because like people know me for the short form content.
Okay. So you're going to be working more on long form content and continue your whole consulting job
correct.
As well.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Okay. So where can people who are interested to learn more about you or to, well, sign up for your course, find you?
So you can follow me on my socials at Mingwei Rocks or check out boomdigitalmedia.com.
Okay. Yeah. Mingwei Rocks is rocks as in shitou. R-O-C-K-S.
Yeah.
Right.
That was a username I started like 10 years. Since Instagram started 10 plus years ago. So yeah, I guess it's important to choose a good username when you are young. If not, you cannot change it. It's very hard to change it now.
I mean, isn't this great? I mean, do you have regrets over Mingwei Rocks?
I guess it's a bit too long. I wish it was a bit shorter because it's hard for people to remember such a long handle.
Well, I think it works though. Although I did put R-O-X and then I'm like, okay, maybe that's a boomer thing. Okay, I'm gonna... But yeah, it's R-O-C-K-S because we do have an audio version and some people might be listening in to this in the audio version. So we want to let people know it's M-I-N-G-W-E-I-R-O-C-K-S. Mm. Thank you so much, Mingwei, for this chat. I've learned so much from you, and it's been a pleasure being able to talk to an athlete and to get some tips on that. We've come to the end of this episode. If you like what you hear, please give us a 5-star rating and remember to share and subscribe so you'll never miss a single episode. A video version of this podcast is also available on YouTube and Spotify. I'll see you in the next episode. It's me, Joanne. Bye.
This was the Zodapop podcast.